Hungry Days Collective.
This is Take Two.
Handheld microphones for the first time, and we're in SVG. Danny, how are you doing?
Good, not too bad. Happy to be here.
Yeah, same. First of all, we were talking a little bit about your injury. So how's the elbow doing?
Doing really good, yeah. So I'm just over 3 weeks post-surgery. It was 3 weeks yesterday. And I actually did a bit of sparring yesterday, even though I wasn't supposed to until 6 weeks. So it feels really good. You know, I still have a little bit of work to do getting the strength back in it. But yeah, it was super, really successful.
Yeah. So all good news?
Yeah.
Except for like sparring before you should. But that happens, eh?
Yeah, you can't help yourself.
Yeah. Did you always have trouble when it came to not just like competing, but like holding yourself back when it comes from injuries and like sports in general?
Yeah, I think like myself, but also probably all other fighters as well, you know, you have this tendency to ignore injuries immediately and presume they're going to be fine by tomorrow. And you get a really high pain threshold from being an MMA fighter, just from getting hit all the time. So a lot of the time when you get an injury, you can't actually differentiate whether it being a big thing or a little thing. Mm. So that's probably the most difficult. I'm actually a physio, so I'm a little bit more clued in to what's a big thing and a little thing.
I see, okay. Yeah.
So that definitely helps. But I definitely ignore like lots of things that end up turning into bigger things when I should have pulled back.
Have you ever suffered from mental block when it comes to like injuries and then sports?
Not really a mental block, more like I have a good ability to ignore it and tell myself it's going to be fine.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Like my strength conditioning coach and my physio would say an absolute bad thing. You know, they've tried to get me to go home at night and actually write down, this is injured and it feels this out of 10. And then in the morning, I have to write the same thing down again. So now I can't lie to myself.
Oh.
Because if I don't actually take out a diary and do that, then I'll completely forget about it. Like I hurt my groin 2 days ago. I've hurt my groin loads of times. It's just like a tendonitis. And I said, I'm going to go home and ice it. I'm going to do all of this. And then the next morning I was like, I don't remember actually doing anything first when I got home. I just totally forgot that it had been injured. So I didn't report it and I didn't deal with it. And then I went and trained the next day.
And then what happened?
It was sore. So they seem to know what they're talking about when
unfortunately
they're trying to get me to do that.
Yeah, it happens. Other than that though, so like obviously we're coming back probably 2 months now from Bellator, from 275.
Yeah, I think it's 6 weeks or six, yeah, maybe 7 weeks this Friday.
Mm. How are you doing? Like, how was that for you?
Yeah, it was tough. I was devastated at the time. Like way more so than I thought I would be, because I used to say, I think I'm in such a good headspace, whether I win or lose, I don't feel like I'll get too high or I'll get too low, I'll be fine. But I think it was because of the way I lost, that it was like such a traumatic loss that I didn't get going. I didn't get to like show anything. I think that's why I was so devastated. I was also like very concussed, which makes you more upset as well. So and then I've been dealing with it really well. I have made like loads of, you know, what you do is you problem solve and you come up with all the things you can do different. And I feel like I'm doing really good. But actually, when I came in here this morning and I see my training partners look at me, I was like, oh dear, I hope I don't cry, because they looked at me like they felt sorry for me, which is tough.
Always. And first of all, I'm sorry that you had to go through that.
No, that's fine. Sorry, Jesus. I feel like I'm welling up. I was like, this happened weeks ago, but I haven't seen anyone because of my surgery. Mm-hmm. So I probably needed to come back here a week after the fight, 2 weeks after the fight, and just like all of my close training partners and my coaches, I probably should have just seen them and been like, oh, it was shit, but let's move on now. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas this is the first time they see me this morning.
Yeah, it's bittersweet.
So, yeah. And I know how they feel, because I see my training partners come in every single week after losing a fight. Well, not necessarily every week, but at least once a month, someone close to me, something will have happened. Or not even someone close to me. It could be like a lad I don't even train with, and I try not to make eye contact with him because I feel bad for him and I don't want him to think I know he lost. Yeah. Do you know, I want to just let him move on past it. So yeah, I felt that for the first time today since 2017 was the last time I lost.
I understand psychologically that it is quite like tough to deal with, eh? Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I think fighters, and probably everyone would agree with me on this, you guys are doing like fucking, what's the word? Like Colosseum type shit. like gladiators. Like you win in front of everyone and unfortunately you lose in front of everyone. Like if you could go back in time, I know that this is something that you can't do. How would you have approached the fight differently?
Well, first of all, I think I wasn't as aware of how high level she was. I knew she was high level and I knew she could hit really hard, but I don't think I'd experienced that actually in the spars leading up to the fight. So first of all, one of the big things that I've done different now is I've reached out to a lot of pro Muay Thai and K1 girls and I'm going to go and spar them because I'd never actually experienced the power before. You know, she hit so hard. So that was the first thing. I knew she was a good striker, but good striker to me wasn't, I didn't imagine that's what it was. So the next thing is technically I went in and just threw two lazy shots straight away off the bat. I'll never do that again. I'll never throw a lazy shot because that's doing it to people and getting away with it. You know, in all of my other fights, I have done that and gotten away with it because they were afraid I was going to take them down and they'd back off away from me. So now I've kind of got in the habit that's how I'd start the fight. So that won't happen again. And even when I was sparring yesterday for the first time since the fight, there was no lazy shots. It was, you know, really fast and constantly thinking about them returning on me. Mm. So the loss itself was a very technical errors. It wasn't, I was in it. I was prepared. I was fit. I was everything else. But technically she taught me a very valuable lesson. And I, fingers crossed, that's not going to happen again because for that to happen in a spar will affect you and you'll go and try and make some changes. But for it to happen in a fight is totally different. Now, like, that's never happening again. You know, the result was so devastating then, you know, I'm super motivated. That won't happen again.
And it won't. You turned pro fairly quickly. So you started MMA at the age of 25, right? After horse racing.
Yeah.
What did you do exactly to do this, like jump right into it and go pro so quick?
So I was always like pretty full on with everything, school, horse racing. I competed on my own horses then in hunt chasing and in a competition like a relay race is what it was. So everything I did, I was always really competitive. I wanted to get out of the horses. I'd had my like fill of it. I'd gone as far as I thought I could go and I just wanted to change. I happened to fall upon MMA and I went into the gym and I did 2 hours the first night. I did BJJ and kickboxing and I came out of the gym and I'd already looked up Ronda Rousey before I went in. I looked up like female champion and she pops up and on the way home I was like, oh, I can be like her. So it's my personality to not want to do things by half. Like I want to go full hog all the way in obsessed or don't do it at all.
Yeah.
So my mother asked me, please don't do this. She said, if you're going to go to do this MMA thing, can it be a hobby? Because you've never had a hobby. Can you just have it as a hobby and like get a 9-to-5 job and, you know, just be less stressed and less wound up? And I said, oh, yeah, I will. And after about a week, she was like, you're ridiculous. You know, how did you come to this in your head already that you're going to be a world champion and you've literally been there a week?
Fair enough. Were you doing horses full time as well before that?
Yeah. So I did 2 years full time straight after school. Then I went and did a college degree. Okay. And did the horses part time. So they paid for my degree as such. I worked mornings, you know, every weekend, that kind of thing. So when I finished my degree was when I decided I was done with the horses. And that's actually when I started MMA as well. So it all kind of came together. But I had to continue to ride out for a full year after that, or for half a year anyway, to kind of pay my way to pay for here and to get an actual physio job so I could stay being here without having to ride out anymore. I just didn't want to be riding out anymore.
Was it tough for you to let go of horse racing?
No, I was like done. I was done. So I thought I was done in June. I think it was 2015. I thought I was done because I went and traveled for 7 months and I was not planning after traveling ever going back. But when I came home from traveling, I needed to join here straight away because I was like full blown obsessed. It was after doing a full year of MMA in Canada and in Ireland, and I wanted to come here. So the only way I could pay for here was actually to go back riding out again. So I rode out for 4 months while I was training MMA, and I just, my head wasn't in it. So the day I walked out the yard, I left all my gear in the yard. I never rode since.
So you just like fell out of love with it. The reason why I'm asking this is because I think a lot of girls start out in sport, but they quit too early. Like that's something that I feel not very passionate about nearly, but like sometimes I think it's like a real pity when girls just like dwindle down at the ages of 12 and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear like someone just fall out of love in one thing and then just kickstart another passion.
Yeah.
Usually, I'm not saying women just, I'm sure men go through this too, right? But it's nearly like a divorce, like a devastating like loss in your life when you fall out of love with a sport.
Yeah.
Was that like emotional for you at a point, or were you done when you were out of it already?
So the decision was emotional, and it was actually like emotional for all my family too, because they had, you know, gone with me on this journey and now I was done. So yeah, it was sad when it happened. But when I left, I needed like a total break. Like I think I had PTSD from it. You know, I didn't even want to look up at a horse in a field. Like I'd look the other way. So it now like I'm you know, much better about it. But yeah, it was really upsetting because I guess I went into horse racing because I wanted to be the best, and I wasn't the best, like nowhere near the best. So that was like, I was grieving over, you know, what I could have been, but I wasn't. It was easy to get over that though by jumping straight into MMA. So maybe that's what the 12-year-old girls need to do, leave the sport. Maybe that sport isn't for them. Maybe they don't see a future in it, but it could be something else that brings, you know, the passion out in them.
It's not just letting go of sport entirely. It's just that one. Like there is a lot more to go.
Absolutely.
And like kudos as well to the likes of Ronda Rousey and all that, where like after your first class, you could like look up someone, like there is someone that they can look up to, right?
Yeah.
That makes such a massive difference.
Huge. Like she like basically can just take all the awards for like women's MMA, in my opinion.
Think so.
Yeah. Like I don't personally like her as a person. You know, I don't like the way she handled herself for a lot of situations, but I can't deny the fact that I wouldn't be here only because of Ronda Rousey. Every single woman fighter, MMA fighter, has to credit her, because it was her and what she did. You know, she was making more money than pretty much every male fighter, bar like Conor and John Jones, I think it was, to like, that just shows like how amazing she was. She was beating all the men on the pay scale, which shows what you're worth, really. I don't mean it. It's not like a money. It's not about money for me. But if someone's paying you that much money, it's because you're standing out and people want to see you. And that, if that person is a woman, like that's amazing.
I think with Ronda, it was one of those things where television has never seen such a confident woman, loud woman before. And like when she started her fight, she was brutal. Like she did not fucking care.
Yes.
And I think that like I look at the Williams sisters, like Serena Williams and Venus Williams, and the way they handle the media is like very, like the questions they used to get asked is so like ridiculous and soft. And like fucking Rhonda just paved the way for just confidence.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is exactly what she did. And the Williams sisters are the same, you know, they're big, strong, confident women. It's not like I'll speak when I'm spoken to, I suppose, which was women, you know, 50 years ago. Yeah. So it's, you know, they really have represented like what a 21st century woman can be.
Did you face anything like uncomfortable or weird, like going into MMA?
No. People ask me this all the time. Yeah. Like they love asking this question because like I'm a confident person. I worked in horse racing pretty much with all men. Yeah. Like there was two women out of 30 staff in a yard I worked in. So I had no problem walking in, rolling with men, learning off men, whatever. No problem. I am, but I'm a confident person and I understand that can be a barrier for women and they might see things that I don't see. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm totally oblivious to that. I don't see me as a woman and him as a man. You know, I generally see myself greater in all aspects, regardless. So I'm probably not the best person to ask. The question is men, are women, you know, is it hard to be in a male dominated sport? Absolutely not. Not when you're Danny McCormack anyway.
Go on. Yes.
Right. So yeah, no, I didn't have any problem.
Love to hear. This is probably like the first answer ever on the internet to be said that way. Fair enough. It's kind of like, probably goes back to confidence, eh? And like how you put up with yourself, where it's just like the head, the chin is up.
Yeah.
And like, no, you respond to me. Like I've dealt with worse than you, kind of.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you get more respect than like no one ever tried to put me in a box or said like, you know, the girl, you'll go with the girl or whatever. Do you know, I never got any of that because I presented myself confidently. I learned as quickly as everyone else did. I tried hard and then they respond back to that, you know. So I don't know what it's like when you're not confident and maybe because you're not confident, you mightn't try as hard. Then you don't try as hard. The coach thinks, oh, this one in the corner, like she's not able or they might lose faith in her. But that all stems from the fact that like she doesn't really believe in herself in the first place. So yeah, that's my opinion of women in sport is, you know, stand up, be noticed, be proud and, you know, the rest will all fall into place. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling on.
No. This is about you. Like, I just shut up when I need to. Okay, like, let's say, fair enough, you are naturally confident and like the circumstances you were born into, like, helped with that. If a woman once is like, eyeing Danny McCormack, eyeing like Sinead Kavanagh, Leo McCourt, all that kind of stuff, but they're feeling a little bit insecure right now. What would you say to that?
I would say try to find the right gym and the right class to start off with. So we always say don't try and lose weight before joining martial arts. Join martial arts and the weight will come off. I think that probably is, you know, a very like lovely way of looking at it. But if you're not confident, you don't feel like you're fit, you're strong, that you're any of these things, I think it's no harm to probably spend like a month preparing yourself for what's about to happen. You're going to be asked to like get down on the floor. You're going to be asked to punch a bag, kick a bag. And if you feel you're really not going to be the physical condition to do that, then maybe spend a walk, a month, like walking, running, or yeah, just getting like generally ready for what's about to happen. Then Google the gyms in your locality. Look at their website, look at their Instagram, their Facebook page. See if you like the vibe. If you can spot maybe other women or children in the posts. Is this gym about like family martial arts or is it like a really hardcore gym, go hard or go home? You'll be able to find then more than likely what's going to work for you. Some gyms even have like before beginners programs where you can come to like a beginner class as such and do that. So once you find the right gym, then it's just a matter of going in, meeting with the people, meeting with the coaches. And from there, you should be able to, you know, be more confident that when you start the class, you're not going to be sparring, you're not going to be thrown head first. So I think being physically prepared, having your research done. So I get lots of people message me on social media asking me, what should I do? What should I join? Should I do Wimp to Warrior? Should I do Jiu-Jitsu? And my answer is always, look at what's in your locality and try to pick out the best gym based on like their social media and their website. Then go meet them. If it all fits into place, I promise you that first beginner's class is not going to be bad at all. Because it's unlikely you have a really good social media and you're a really nice person to meet, and then you go into the class and you kill the person. Like that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the MMA scene in Ireland is impressive. Like kudos probably to like Conor McGregor himself, right? Mm-hmm. But like there are so many gyms around right now, and it's also just like, probably I'd say as well, pick out what you kind of like, right? I think MMA could be a little bit more intimidating than probably jiu-jitsu. You can argue with me here. Jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, yeah. It's a little bit more specific, right?
Yeah.
Then MMA is just like, do it all together.
Yeah, when you say MMA to like a random person on the street, they think Conor McGregor in the cage, blood, whatever else.
Broken nose is everything, yeah.
They're not going joining an MMA gym. No way. I'm not doing an MMA class. But if you see jiu-jitsu and they're wearing gis or Muay Thai and they're holding pads for each other and, you know, it's definitely less intimidating. I think MMA comes with kind of a preconceived opinion that it's what Conor McGregor does in a cage. That's MMA at the highest level. That's not a general beginner's MMA class. Yeah. But I could understand why people, that would scare you off.
So there's Wimp to Warrior, right? And you have a gym with your husband, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you doing Wimp to Warrior too? Or?
This is our first year we're doing it. So Wimp to Warrior is now called Train Alta. So they've rebranded and it's called Train Alta now. This is the first year of Train Alta. So at the moment we're just advertising to get the people in for the trial class, which is in a couple of weeks' time. Ours starts in May. So we're hoping we'll get like up to 20 people and we'll get to train them for 20 weeks. So this
and then
is
what happens afterwards?
What happens after? At the end of the 20 weeks, they get to fight.
Yeah.
I think one thing people don't realize is though, they don't have to fight.
I see.
So that sometimes butts people off. It can also be a big seller. I want to do the 20 weeks because I want to fight. But then some people want to do the 20 weeks. But if they think, no, actually, I don't want to do it, they don't have to. They could do a grappling match, they could do a kickboxing match, or they don't have to do anything at all.
You can just show up to the event
and
wearing,
watch.
Yeah, exactly, wearing a suit.
Yeah.
I was fangirling over two girls that you're coaching right now.
Yeah.
Ali and Olivia.
Yes.
How old are they, first of all?
So Ali's just turning 16. God, I should know her date of birth, but her birthday's very soon. She keeps reminding me. Olivia is 12, 13 in June. And yeah, they immediately put a smile on my face when I think about them two girls. They're very, very different. Ali's like your typical Irish redhead, white skin, always like too warm, real Irish girl. She comes from a pet farm. And then Olivia is your Polish, Eastern European blood, tanned skin, strong as an ox, afraid of nothing. I'm actually a little bit afraid of Olivia myself. So they're complete opposites, but they train together. They both went to the World Championships last year and they both got a bronze medal each. Olivia was actually only just turned 12, which was the youngest possible age to do the tournament. So she was the youngest person.
Against how old?
Against 12 to 13.
Okay.
So she just turned 12 and one girl in it was nearly 14.
I see, yeah.
So she did exceptional for that. Like we only just got her in on the dates. So the two girls train with us in Relentless. They do Muay Thai, they do Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling. They compete in all three of the sports all year round. And then they're obviously going back to the World Championships in MMA this year again.
The reason why I brought them up as well is just because like there needs to be a legacy on this, because these girls I think are going to be champions.
Yes.
Ali is scary, like in the nicest way, if you're listening to this, Ali. Like sometimes I look at I see all of these clips on Relentless, right? And her fighting is so intimate, like she is a killer right there.
Yes.
Does she have a nickname yet?
No, she doesn't.
You need to come up with a nickname for her, though.
It has to be something to do with her red hair, but maybe she doesn't want that either. I'll have to ask her.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, no, she doesn't have a name yet, but she's a wizard on the ground, which is unusual because I haven't got a big jiu-jitsu background or anything. You know, I use my ground game to punch people in the face. I've got one submission and that's it. So it's really surprising when Ali only learned from me. She's like a wizard on her back. So she had an MMA fight 2 weeks ago in Shaolin, a novice MMA fight. She fought a girl 5 kilos heavier than her. And the minute the girl went to take her down, Ali immediately jumped straight onto an armbar and had her finished before they hit the ground. And I would never do this stuff, you know. So she's very creative. She loves her jiu-jitsu. She loves her flying teeps into big knees in Muay Thai. Like, she's very exciting and very, very creative, which is something I'm probably not. But that's her personality, and that's what she loves about the sport. Mm-hmm.
I think it's also when they start out fairly young mm-hmm. and just in love with everything about it. Like, I've seen it with my brother, right, where he's into football, not Gaelic football, soccer. When kids are just completely immersed into a sport, they are just like fans of everything. And they just get so creative where it's like, oh, a little bit of this and a little bit of Rousey, newness, you know, and it just keeps going like that. So it's so nice to see. Your future. So what are you looking into now?
So I need to get back in the winning ranks. That's like my short term goal.
Okay.
So I'm going to get a fight hopefully early summer and get another win under my belt. Then I'm going to be back in Bellator in September. So back to kind of right the wrong, get a win back there. And from there, honestly, I'm just heading towards a division and a world championship. That's where I need to go after that. So I'll have had 7 fights under my belt. I need to be in an organization that has a division and that's going to give me a belt at the end of it. So if Bellator don't do that or don't step up with that, then I'll have to move on. Yeah.
To the big ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not going to go down, and Bellator is so high up already. So I'm not going to drop down to a lower level promotion. I'm going to keep going up. So I'd love Bellator to put a belt on the line for me. But reality is I'm an Irish European fighter. I'm not in America. So it might not make sense for them.
What's it like for European fighters versus American fighters? Like, do you think we have that chip on our shoulder?
So in what way? So what way do you think the chip on the shoulder?
I think the chip on the shoulder is in opportunities to scale are a little bit less.
For Europeans. Yes. That's grand. I was checking. That's what you mean. It 100% is. It's not something to like whinge about. I don't complain about things. I live in Ireland. I don't live in Vegas, but there's no like denying if you live in Vegas and you're signed with the UFC and there's a short notice fight, you're the first one up for that fight because you're literally there.
Yeah.
You know, we also get taxed massive, bringing money back from the US to Europe. So when fights come to Europe, like the UFC or Bellator come to Europe, it means we actually get to keep most our money, not get taxed on it. So yeah, it is a big disadvantage. If you look at the roster in Bellator and the roster in the UFC, the majority are on that side of the pond. To be a European fighter and be signed, you have to have a really good winning record. It doesn't seem to be the same for the Americans. They can get signed on a lot less of records and they get kept on. Whereas if a European loses a few fights, they just get rid of them.
Exactly.
So, but look, it's a business game. It's about money at the end of the day. They don't care about me or anybody else. They care about who's making money. And Europeans cost more money, don't bring as much of an audience as well.
Yeah.
So now obviously Conor's like the huge exception of that. You know, he's the biggest in the sport and he is a European. But it is a little bit harder over here. But, you know, I could move to America if I wanted to. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about it.
Do you see a future of MMA just growing massively in Europe? Because I know that Bellator are kind of like trying their best, in fairness to them.
Yeah, so there's 2 ways of doing it. One is to have more professional shows and getting more eyes on the sport that aren't generally fans anyway. So getting on like national TV with the big promotions. But then the other way of doing it is by having these world championships, these cadet world championships and national champions. So that's probably the biggest way to grow the sport, is actually from the ground up. So now we've got the cadet world championships. We can get 12-year-olds into gyms, train them, and they can become a world champion already. Like, it's, so that's what boxing does. That's what all of a lot of other sports do, that they have huge accolades for kids and juniors. Yeah. So I think that will see big growth in Europe and across the world with IMAF producing these young champions.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Danny, thank you so much.
You're
you
more
have
than
to go
welcome.
Now. Thank you for bringing me here. So it's like quite
yeah,
cool.
Deadly.
Fucking gorilla looking
thank
at me.
Thank you to Sarah and John for letting us use it.
Yeah. All right. Shout out to them. Yeah. Cheers.
Longer Days Collective.